Chapter 7. Now, about those mountains. Your customer is unhappy. You realize she has a valid complaint, but there aren't any procedures that tell you how to help. If you worked for a large company, you'd refer her to the area that specializes in escalated issues. But your company doesn't have a department like that. It's up to you. Either you'll find a way to assist this customer, or she'll fall through the cracks. What will you do? I've said that we CSRs are asked to perform miracles and that we can't just turn away from the tough cases. But how can we proceed when we have no guidelines? First, we practice the three-way CSR conversation. This is our way of seeking direction from God while we're listening to the customer's complaint. It makes us available to God so that God can help this person through us. Second, we seek a more productive way of viewing the problem. Think outside the box is an old, tired cliche, but that's what we have to do. It's a good idea for us to remember that God dwells outside the box. So anytime we engage in a three-way, we're stretching outside our own narrow point of view. Granted, we have to become mature listeners before we'll be aware of how different God's voice is from our own. But that's what we're trying to do whenever we have a three-way. We're trying to get outside our own preconceptions and hear what God is saying to us from out there. Third, we get help from others, our coworkers, our supervisors, or a senior representative in our department. In the toughest cases, it will often be necessary to contact other departments. Each situation will be different, but the general principle is true. Any unusual case will probably require that we get assistance from somebody else in the company. And this is the core of the problem, because sometimes people in other departments are not very helpful. And that can be more frustrating than any encounter with the customer from hell. We CSRs can't get the job done without relying on lots of other people in a variety of back offices. They're the ones who do the actual work. We may promise our customers the moon, but we can't deliver it. Other people do that. Or not. So if we want to make sure that our promises are fulfilled, then we have to be effective at dealing with people in those other departments. Some of them are nice and some aren't. But we need them all. Without them, we're sunk. So for starters, we've got to get along with them. Even if we aren't asking them for favors, we've still got to stay on good terms with them. Here are some rules that I've found useful for building good relationships with people in operations. Deviate from them at your own risk. Assume that you're talking to an intelligent, capable person. That may not be true, but you won't get anywhere with them if you treat them like they're stupid or incompetent. Believe that they're just as good as you are, and that they want to do the right thing just as much as you do, and that they'll help you if they can. Understand that they have to follow procedures. There may be lots of reasons why they can't do what you're asking them to do, or at least why they can't do it in precisely the way you want it done. Be a quick study. The better you understand their procedures, the more effective you'll be at making requests that can be granted. Remember to do it as a three-way. Pray that God will help you work together with this person to do what's right. And listen carefully, both to the other person and to God. If you do, you might learn that you're asking for something unreasonable. Be ready to change your mind as needed. If you're sure that you're right, and they still resist, proceed with utmost respect. No matter how difficult it may be to persuade them, remember that you'll need their help again on another issue soon. Today, tomorrow, or even minutes from now. If you go ballistic, you might win this battle, but you'll lose the war. Each person in the back office is essential for your success. Never forget that. Here's something else to keep in mind. Remember what I said about how we CSRs are quick to judge our customers? I have news for you. People in other departments are equally quick to judge us. It's an occupational hazard, remember? the tendency to judge affects them just as much as it does us. Based on what I said in Chapter 5, here are the obstacles we may have to face, along with recommendations for overcoming those obstacles. 1. They may think we're asking a stupid question. Try to be patient with them, but don't sound condescending. That'll just annoy them. Address them respectfully, and they just might come around. 2. We may have to overcome a communication barrier. They may not understand what we're asking because they use a different terminology in their department from the one we're using. All we can do is listen carefully for such communication barriers and try to speak their language. 3. They may get upset with us for making a special request. It'll be our task to convince them that we're not asking for something out of the ordinary. We're just trying to give the client their due. 4. They might consider us the customer from hell. To guard against this, we'll have to remain professional, keep emotionally charged words out of the conversation, and stick to the facts. We should keep the discussion focused on exactly what we think needs to happen, and we should always be open to alternative ways of getting it done. As CSRs, we're the customer's advocates. Sometimes people in the back offices are annoyed by that because they're just trying to do their jobs, and we're getting involved in things we don't understand as well as they do. But if we don't fight for our customers, who will? We just have to remember to do it in the proper spirit, approaching operations people with respect and enlisting their help in what should be a common cause. Everything I've said so far applies to our day-to-day dealings with the back offices. But what do we do when our customers have a problem that isn't explicitly spelled out in company policy yet? Or what if we believe the policy needs to be changed? It happens. On one occasion, I had a head-on collision with a very nice lady in operations. She was polite and was also a good listener, but we reached a stalemate and I couldn't figure out why. Let me tell you the story. A customer called to complain about his auto lease bill. After listening to his story and researching his case, I discovered that we were charging him for taxes that were not required. At the beginning of his lease, he had lived in Illinois, which was an upfront state, a state that required him to pay all his taxes in the beginning. He had recently moved to Wisconsin, which had a reciprocal agreement with all upfront states. As long as the customer had paid his taxes upfront, Wisconsin would not make him pay again if he happened to move there. This was an exception that our policies and procedures said nothing about. I submitted a detailed request to the lease operations department to correct this error. I even printed and sent over information from the state of Wisconsin's website, showing conclusively that the tax was not to be assessed in this case. To my amazement, my request wasn't granted. In fact, I wasn't even given an explanation for why it was declined. I called the person who had worked on the request. She was polite, so I tried again to tell her why I believed we should not be charging the tax. Although she didn't interrupt me, it was also clear that she wasn't going to change her mind. She told me she had to keep charging the customer, and she didn't even try to explain why. She just kept saying it was policy, and she had to do it that way. When the conversation was over, I was deeply perplexed. I had given her explicit guidelines from the Wisconsin website that clearly told us what to do in this case, but she was unimpressed. She didn't refute the evidence, nor did she claim that I had misinterpreted it. She simply dismissed it. She was a nice person. If she had growled at me, I might have concluded that she was belligerent, but she was actually very patient and listened courteously to everything I said. On the other hand, I could see that there was nothing I could say that would convince her. And to add to my confusion, she didn't say anything that would help me understand why she was refusing to comply with the state's guidelines. A day or two passed. I was sure that the customer was right, but my conversation with the woman in lease ops had seemed quite final. "Lord," I asked, "what should I do?" I was given the strong impression that I should call her again. But why? I couldn't think of any other way to state my case, nor could I come up with alternative ways of asking her the question. I prayed again and continued to believe that God was encouraging me to call her back. So I did. As I predicted, each of us just repeated the things we had said on the earlier occasion. Neither of us lost our temper, but the discussion seemed like a waste of time. Afterwards, I prayed, "Lord, why did you want me to call her back?" The following question came to mind. What exactly did she tell you? Well, she kept saying, "There's nothing I can do," and "My hands are tied." But that doesn't make any sense to me. I've shown her the state's guidelines. Why does she say she can't do anything about it? I pondered this. Out of all the people in the company, she was the only one who worked on taxation issues for auto leases. There wasn't anyone else but her who could do something about it. Then I remembered something else she had said. She said, "I can't change company policy." The more I thought about it, the more sense it made. Although she was the only person in a position to correct the error, she was not empowered to do so without a policy change. She could readily see that, according to the state's website, Wisconsin did not require her to continue charging this customer the tax. But it was bank policy for us to do it this way, and she didn't have the authority to change the policy. To me, it seemed like a simple thing. I had already given her the information she needed. It only remained for her to take that information to her supervisor, the man who did have the power to change our policy, and convince him to make the correction. But she didn't believe it was part of her role to make requests like that. She seemed to realize that a policy revision was called for, but she lacked the power to make it happen. "Lord," I asked, "what can I do to help her?" I remembered something else she had said, something about needing a directive from the state. That had confused me because I had already given her the guidelines from the government website. She said that she needed a directive. "I get it now," I prayed. "She's telling me she won't bring this to her supervisor unless she gets something directly from the state telling her to do it. But how's that going to happen?" My team leader didn't like getting involved in situations like this. But coincidentally, she was out of the office that day, and the person covering for her was the leader of our escalation unit, the area that specialized in problems just like this one. I discussed the situation with her, and she did something my regular team leader would never have done. She gave me authorization and time off the phones to call the state of Wisconsin Taxation Department for advice. The specialist who answered my call was surprisingly helpful. Sorry, but I had a mental image of a bureaucrat who didn't want to be bothered. I was wrong. He listened attentively and confirmed that our bank should not be assessing the tax. But now came the crucial step. I took a deep breath and asked him if he would be willing to put that into writing. And under my breath I said, "He won't go for it, Lord." To my amazement, he said, "I'll be glad to write you a letter." And he did. A few days later, I received it, a clear statement that our bank should not be assessing the tax, along with a paragraph explaining why. I showed it to the supervisor of the escalation group, and she gave me a high five. Then I delivered it personally to the lady in lease ops. She glanced at the letter and said, "Thank you. Now I can do something." The error was corrected on the customer's account, but more importantly, the policy was changed. In fact, the lease ops supervisor did the right thing. He investigated the issue thoroughly and discovered that there were several other states that engaged in this give-and-take arrangement. This resulted in a sweeping policy revision that encompassed all those reciprocal agreements and affected a lot of customers. Our CSR manuals were kept in three-ring binders. Yes, we were low-tech in those days. And it was an awesome experience for me when our managers told us to rip out those pages and insert the new version. Mission accomplished. Mountain moved. Despite these challenges, or perhaps because of them, this is a part of the job that I've always found especially rewarding. The lease ops woman I just told you about became a friend of mine after that. I made a lot of friends throughout the company in a wide variety of departments. I had to. But it wasn't just because I had to. It was a pleasure working with them, and especially realizing that there were so many good people in other areas of the bank. This is a fact of life for frontline CSRs. We're the ones who talk to the customers and discover the problems, but we don't do the back office work that resolves those problems. We depend on people in other departments to do that. Sometimes it doesn't happen on its own, so we have to get involved. But the resolution still isn't ours to achieve. It's theirs. That's just a result of the division of labor. But there's a larger principle at work here, one that goes way beyond the company organization chart. It's at the heart of the imitation of Christ. We can't save the world by ourselves, no matter how much faith we have. God may be working through us, but not just us. It's all about teamwork. Nor is that an accident. It's part of the plan. God is trying to save the world by reaching people like you and me in the world and transforming it from the inside out. Jesus gathered working people around him and shared the plan with them, and they spread the word to working people all over the world. The imitation of Christ is not a solitary pursuit. It's been a team sport from the beginning and will continue to be that way right up to the end. That's the plan. Depending on others can be difficult at times, but that's how we perform miracles for our customers. And it's a daily reminder to us that even within our own organization, there may be lots of other people who are just as service-oriented as we are. It can be quite inspiring to realize that we're part of a network of caring individuals. It's worth being a CSR just to experience that.